This is the RDU on Stage podcast. I'm Lauren Van Hamert, your host, and on this episode, I'm chatting with Patrick Torres and Michael Larson. On this episode, I'm doing something I have never done before on this podcast. I'm bringing in a co-host who also happens to be my daughter. Now, my daughter, Zara, is a senior in high school who aspires to be a teacher. She's an honors student, competitive gymnast, loves to swim. Oh, and by the way, she has autism. Michael Larson is a junior in high school. He's a gifted actor who prefers musical theater over drama, and he is starring in the Raleigh Little Theater production of The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime. And by the way, he also has autism. In fact, he's one of the few actors with autism to ever play the part of Christopher Boone in this show. Later, you'll hear me talk to Patrick Torres, the artistic director of Raleigh Little Theater, about why it was important for him to find an actor who has autism to play this part. But first, here is my daughter interviewing Michael about the show, school, and the similarities that connect us.
So, Michael.
Hi.
Hi. You've said that you connect with the character of Christopher because you have some of the same quirks he does.
Mm-hmm.
What are the similarities between you and Christopher?
I think a big part of it is that we both see the world very literally. Like, we take everything at face value. Like, there's a scene in the play where he explains, like, exactly how he sees things and how it's different from everyone else. Everyone else just sees sort of the, like, what they need to see to understand what's going on. But someone like me or Christopher sees everything, not just things that you need to see, literally the whole entire picture, every single tiny minute little detail. So that's a big part of it. We both also, when people are speaking, we both also take things exactly the way that they're said. Like, we don't really tap into too many of the, like, subtleties in people's tone or in the way people string their words together. We just sort of take everything based on the words that are said. So I think that's a big part of it, too.
I definitely agree that we do take things very literally. So what are the differences between you and Christopher, since you just explained the similarities?
I think the main difference is that Christopher can get very emotionally overwhelmed very easily. I can get emotionally overwhelmed a lot easier than most people, but not that easily. I've taken lots of therapy, so I do know strategies to calm myself down in situations. And I know that some of the situations in the play where Christopher just absolutely loses it, I would probably be able to. I would still probably be upset, but I would definitely be able to calm myself down a lot easier than he can.
So you say that in some instances in the play, Christopher loses it. How do you act that out, since you can handle it better than he can sometimes?
I just remember the glory days, pretty much. when I was just like in middle school. For some reason, when I got into middle school, I thought, okay, I'm in middle school, so the teachers are gonna expect more from me. So that means I need to keep everything in pristine condition. And so I got, like, in this really bad habit of, like, making sure that everything was, like, perfectly laid out, everything was perfectly organized, everything was absolutely perfect. So that really made middle school, especially the first 2 years of middle school, like, a pretty miserable experience. I got the exact same sort of fits that Christopher does, like, you know, where he lays down on the floor, sort of squirms a little bit, rolls around, sort of cries. Yeah, that I can just remember distinctly what that was like. So that really helps me act out those specific moments.
Cool. What has been the most challenging part of playing this part and doing this play, and why?
Probably the most challenging part is balancing school, high school, with it. In all honesty, it's not. In my opinion, I'm pretty lucky to have the memory that I have. So memorizing the lines wasn't like horrible. I mean, it was a little difficult, but it wasn't like not that hard. As long as you just put in the work, it's really not that bad. But what really is hard is juggling like school with it. Every day that we had rehearsal, except for on the weekends, obviously. You get up bright and early, you go to school, you take your honors classes, you have a ton of homework, you go for 6.5 hours, and then you go, you work on homework all the way in the car, all the way over here, you work on homework whenever you can, and then you have to put in a lot of emotional energy to be able to do this play, and then you get home at like 11 or something. It's, really a lot. The play itself has been mostly fun. I mean, it's been hard, but definitely the hardest part is juggling, like, life with the play.
I can see that, especially as a junior in high school.
Yeah.
Do you think the play is an accurate portrayal of someone who has autism?
I don't see anything wrong with it. The writing, especially in Act Two, is another subject altogether. But in terms of, like, how autism is represented, I think it's pretty accurate. Like, if it wasn't very accurate, I don't think I would be able to relate to Christopher as easily as I do. So I think play is definitely doing something right when it comes to representing someone with autism.
And I think that's a very cool part of this play, because there are many different types of autism, so if you can wrap it up all in one play, that, yeah.
Right. Like, I noticed this when I was reading the script after I got this role. It's a very disjointed play. It's like cut into very small, very distinct sections, and I think that that's meant to convey the way a person with autism's mind would perceive everything in very split, very specific regions of time. So I think that that was a purposeful choice. I could just be reading too deep into it, but that's how I always took it.
And the last question I have for now, unless I think of anything else, is, as a person who has autism, what do you want people to know or understand about autism?
I want people to understand that people with autism are capable of everything that a person without autism is capable of. All it is, we're not crazy. It's not like we can't think properly. We can't do anything that other people can do. No, like, we're perfectly capable human beings. We're perfectly capable Homo sapiens. But all it is our mind thinks differently than other people. So I hope that people can understand that being a person with autism is not a bad thing. It's not something to be ashamed of. It's something that you should be proud of, because it's a very cool thing to be able to see the world in a different way while still understanding how other people see it. It's really a very enlightening experience, going through like all of the struggles that someone with autism would go through. But like, you can overcome it if you just work at it, and once you overcome it, you're just left with a very unique, beautiful mind. So I hope that people can understand that.
Perfect. Now I'm going to pass it on to my mom.
So Patrick, why was it important to cast a person with autism in this role?
It's important to me because I felt like, you know, although there is no diagnosis in the book or the play, I mean, the behaviors that Christopher exhibits, most people who have experience with those behaviors would put Christopher on the spectrum. And so for me, representation matters. And especially as a community theater, you know, our goals are probably a little different than a professional theater. For us, it was about learning to expand our reach into the community. If we're going to tell a story about a certain person, we want that person to be represented on stage. And then as an artist, like, I knew I wanted to direct the play because I just really loved the story, but I didn't want to direct autism because that's not my lived experience. So it was really critical to have someone on the spectrum in that role so that we could you know, bring a true experience to it and not try to imagine what it would be like, but to actually have someone who's lived it.
I get the sense that this was somewhat a collaborative process between you and Michael and the rest of the cast. So how have you collaborated on the different facets of developing this character?
There's so much specificity in terms of movement and blocking and where you're supposed to go. So I think in that sense, it wasn't as collaborative. But when it comes to character, I really didn't give Michael a ton of direction or what, because it was just so real and because he's relating to the character and bringing so much to it. And I think probably what you don't know, Michael, and I don't, because I haven't said that to you, is just how much I learned just from being in the room with you and how much that influenced what we wanted to have happen in the room. Just learning from you. I mean, Michael's got such a keen mind. I mean, he just kind of alluded to Act Two. The very first time we got to Act Two, Michael kind of stopped rehearsal. He was like, "This act is crazy." He was like, "The pacing of this thing is so strange and so weird." And we were all like, yeah. And then the more that we kind of developed into the play, I was like, man, he was so right. It's intentionally so different from Act One because Christopher leaves all of his comfort. And so, you know, to have Michael point that out, I learned a lot from you. Because there's the journey to London that happens in Act Two, and that's, you know, I guess pretty iconic part of the way this play works. I think it functions to kind of give neurotypical audiences a glimpse into what it's like to have sensory overload. And so to do that, we were just playing with a lot of different ways that each scene could happen. And the newsstand, I did this weird thing where I made Christopher lay on the ground and everyone was towering above him. And it just looked so, it didn't work at all. And so it was just a moment where I go, oh, well, I have the expert in the room. So I just walked over one day at a break and I said, "Hey, Michael, if you walked into a newsstand in some major city, what would be overwhelming?" And he just started talking about it, like the colors of the magazines and a lot of people and there's a lot of noise and maybe the person who's selling stuff isn't paying a lot of attention to me and like being scared because it's a brand new city. And so I was like, oh yeah, we can do that. And so now what exists in the play is really came from Michael's head.
What's been the most surprising part of this process for you, Patrick?
I mean, I think this play, almost more than any other, is a true leap of faith that everybody that you put in the room, it's going to take everybody. That's hard, you know, because we have a movement director and our assistant director played a really big role. I mean, she walked a lot of the choreographed moments that we wanted Michael to ultimately do as Christopher. She was part of the development of those so that we, you know, minimized the amount of time we were having Michael not only in the rehearsal room so he'd get that homework done, but also just like, we're going to lift you 100 times as we figure out what is the vocabulary of this. And we just thought, well, we don't need to have Michael do all that. So everybody in the room, we had to figure out together how to get on the same page and start heading in the right direction. And I think theater's magic and that always happens, but it always is a surprise. It always is a surprise how it all comes together. And this one, the cast was so good at rolling with a lot of changes because we would figure out one scene and it would affect a scene three scenes later that we would need to then go alter. So I think I'm surprised by that because it felt like directing Shakespeare in a way. Mm-hmm. Like it just felt so, I didn't expect that going in. It just felt so big and so complex. You know, I remember the first time I directed Shakespeare, I felt so humbled by how big and brilliant it is. And this play really hasn't felt any different than that.
What advice would you have for other organizations, specifically other theaters, and working towards being more inclusive, making more inclusive casting decisions, casting actors with disabilities, not only in disabled roles, but non-disabled roles?
Yeah, so one of the things that really helped, and I credit Betsy, who's the executive, Betsy Ludwig, who's the executive director of Arts Access, for really helping me through this. A, if you're local, talk to her. She's so great and so willing to talk to anybody about how to make the arts more accessible. But one of the things that she really taught us is just to be really communicative and clear about what accommodations you have made in the past, what accommodations you're willing to make. For the casting announcement for Christopher, we named everything in that description that Christopher would have to do. There'd be rapid changes of light. There would be rapid changes of sound, loud noises. You have to be comfortable being touched. You have to be comfortable disclosing you have autism. So we just named it all. So that there's the kind of that on the technical end. I think on the kind of like philosophical, like just human being end, I think what I've learned is don't be afraid to get it wrong. Just keep talking. Right. And so, you know, there's just so many times where I think because we're artists and we do care about the world we live in, and particularly people, I think we want to get it right. I want to cast someone with autism and I don't want to mess up. I don't want to hurt them. I don't want to say something the wrong way. I don't want to do that. And I think the more courageous we can get about just knowing that you're going to mess up and just being open and like having the conversation, the better. Don't be afraid to step into it because you're scared of messing up somehow. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, open the invitation and keep communicating. And, you know, I think that's been really encouraging. And Betsy, again, from Arts Access, said to me one time, she's like, you just keep moving forward with integrity and intention. And if you do that, you're not going to miss, you know, because the people in the community will help you learn how to be better. And so, you know, for me, the gift of Michael being here is not only his great performance, but it's just everything he's taught me and the whole cast and the organization about working with people who think differently than we do. It's been great.
Were there any special accommodations that you had to make for Michael during this whole process?
I mean, other than like having Rachel do a lot of that initial choreography, we haven't really. I mean, Michael has been really great. And Michael is also one of the things that is great about Michael is he's also a great self-advocate. So if he needs a break, if he needs to do something differently, or if, you know, honestly, if he had a thought about the way something was being staged, he felt comfortable saying that. And we listened and, you know, we kind of took Michael's lead. But yeah, he's been fantastic.
For people seeing this play, what do you hope people will take away from it, especially when they see you play the part?
You want to go first?
Sure, I'm happy to. Think about that. That's great, Michael. Yeah, I'm happy to. What I hope people take away from it is kind of like what I hope that people take away from all theater, particularly when we meet characters who are different from us, that we see that these walls that we put up between us as people that define someone as over on the other side, like you are different than me, that we kind of break those walls down and we go, look, we all have families, we all have relationships, we all have hopes, we all have dreams, we all want to be somebody. And just because someone's different than me, it doesn't make them separate from me. We are people. We all have things that unite us. And I hope plays like this pull us together. I hope that people will walk away from this play knowing a character at least and watching a real life human being, Michael, knowing someone who has autism and going, you know what? They're not that different from me, and I should break down these walls that separate us. I think all good theater should do that.
Like, people all have different opinions, and mostly everyone, accepts that. So why can't we accept people having different minds or seeing the world differently as long as we can all relate to one another? I mean, we're all human. I won't say we all bleed the same blood because that's technically not true, but we're all human, and I think that if we really tap into that humanity of someone with autism, we can understand and connect with who they are and how they're very similar to us. And for my particular performance, I hope that people can understand, can see that, you know? Like, people are sometimes scared to talk to people with autism because they're so different, they're worried that they might say the wrong thing. But like Patrick was saying, you can't be very afraid to say something wrong because you're never gonna understand the person. You're never gonna really get any closer with them if you don't make those mistakes. So, it's true, people with autism are different, but we really are we really are all can relate to one another in many, many different ways. So I hope that people can understand that after seeing this production.
The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime runs through February 9th at Raleigh Little Theater. More information about the show, along with a link to the Arts Access website, can be found in the episode notes. If you like what you've heard today, please consider subscribing to the podcast, follow us on social media at RDU on Stage, or visit us online at www.rduonstage.com. Until next week, I'll see you at the theater.